Last class, we discussed how we can embed the symmetries of QCD at the quark level into the symmetries of hadronic states. In particular, we talked about the SU3 flavor symmetry rotating amongst the lightest quarks, UD and S. And we discussed the group theory of different representations of hadronic states. And we considered the case of the pseudoscalar Meyazon octet, and we showed that the prediction of SU3 flavor symmetry is that the masses of the pseudoscalars should satisfy the following relations. For the pseudoscalar, Jp equals 0 minus. Was that the pion masses should be the same as the kaon masses, should be the same as the eta masses, which is badly broken. All right? They're all light-ish, but they're not equal to one another. And so what we want to do is show how we can include the effect of SU3 flavor symmetry breaking in this argument. So, the largest source of SU3 flavor breaking is the mass of the strange quark, which is not at all small compared to the scale of QCD, and it's also much larger than the up and down quark masses. So let's go back to the original Lagrangian for the standard model for quarks. We have Q bar I D slash, and then we have a mass matrix. So I'll write it in the following way. I'll keep a universal term for the up and down quarks, which are very light compared to the scale of QCD, and their masses around a few MeV. But then I'll keep the strange quark mass as a separate parameter. And then I'll write Q like this, plus the gluon terms. So I can write it in matrix form, like as so. ID slash, I'll have a universal term times the identity. And then I'll have another term, which I'll call delta S, which will be a matrix. So delta S is just 0, 0, and then MS. And then I just have to subtract off the additional universal mass term that I put in right here. OK. So just to be clear, M0 is MU and MD is the universal mass, or common mass. Or U and D, MS is the mass of the strain. Since M0 is expected to be much less than MS, all right, this is approximately just equal to. Zero, zero, MS. Okay. All right, so the thing is that delta S breaks the flavor symmetry. It picks up a preferred direction in SU3 flavor space. So we want to know how that breaking translates into the hadronic level Lagrangian when we write down the Lagrangian for the hadronic states. And so there's a trick where we can treat this matrix delta S as what's called a spuria. And the trick is that we assume that delta S also transforms under SU3 flavor. And how it transforms is what we need in order to write the Lagrangian in a way that preserves SU3 flavor. So if we assume that delta S transforms in the following way, then the Lagrangian is, again, SU3 flavor symmetric. So it's really just a trick. It doesn't actually transform, but it's just a way of keeping track of how the symmetry breaking carries through to the hadronic Lagrangian. So once we include this transformation property, then obviously if we have Q bar delta S Q, it will transform as Q bar U dagger U delta S U dagger U Q. And so then the whole thing will just be invariant. Like so. OK. So again, it's just a trick. And so now we want to write down the effective theory for the hadronic fields. And we're just going to focus on the mesons, where we now include additional terms we can write down involving this delta S. And we're just going to focus on the meson fields. All right. So here's a Lagrangian. We have what we wrote down yesterday, the kinetic term. And then we have the mass term for the octet. And then we have other, we can write down other mass terms that involve delta S. And so the only one you can write down involving the meson field M would be as follows. I can have 1/2 alpha, the trace of delta S M squared. That's also invariant under the symmetry. Now, let me also include the eta prime. So I have the kinetic term, 1/2 d mu eta prime, d mu eta prime. I have the mass term for the singlet, 1/2 mu 1 squared eta prime squared. And then I can also have terms involving delta S involving the eta prime. So in principle, I could have a term like this, and write down 1/2 beta eta prime, the trace of delta S M squared. And then there's another term, 1/2 gamma, the trace of delta S times eta prime squared. And this is only the free part of the Lagrangian, so I have the interaction terms too. OK, so in general, I have three extra terms I can write down. And I'm only focusing on the parts that I can specify due to the flavor symmetry. But each term will have some unknown coefficient, alpha, beta, and gamma, which are the things that I cannot compute. All right, can't compute those from first principles. As you can see, even if we don't know them, we can still derive useful statements about the spectrum. And in effect, there's only two new parameters, because this gamma, you can ultimately just lump in together with this one as well. So let's write down the Lagrangian. We have the kinetic terms. And I'll just write out the mass terms. I have 1/2 minus 1/2 mu 8 squared, and then the pion fields. So I have pi naught squared plus 2 pi plus pi minus. So I'm just expanding out all of the matrix terms here. Then I have minus 1 half mu 8 squared plus alpha ms over 2 times 2 k naught bar plus 2 k plus k minus. Okay, I didn't really need that factor 2 here. And then I have minus 1 half eta prime times a matrix, which is mu 8 squared plus 2 thirds alpha ms minus beta ms over square root of 6 minus beta ms over square root of 6, and then mu 1 squared plus gamma ms, eta prime. Okay, so the gamma term you can just lump in together with what we had called mu 1 squared before. But we have these new terms involving alpha and beta. So, just to say it again, the Spurion trick is just a tool for teaching us how the symmetry breaking terms propagate from the quark level Lagrangian to the hadronic level Lagrangian. Even though we don't know the underlying coefficients, the group theory structure of what we're doing restricts the possible number of terms at the hadron level. And in particular, tells us how the strange quark, what is the effect of the strange quark mass. So it has two effects. The obvious one is that it splits the degeneracy. Between the octet states. And the other one is it leads to mixing. Between the octet eta and the singlet eta prime. So let me put these in quotes. So what we introduce as eta and eta prime in terms of octet and singlet states are not actually the physical mass eigenstates, because there's mixing between them. And so the physical mass eigenstates will be linear combinations of octet and singlet. But for now, we're going to neglect that mixing. The mixing angle is small, experimentally. It's about 20 degrees. But for now, we're going to just treat it to be 0, which means that we could just set beta to 0. The reason the mixing angle is small is not because beta is small. It's because the term over here is large. This mu 1 squared gets a large contribution of order a GeV from the anomalous breaking of the axial U1. And so the mixing angle is small just because one of the diagonal elements is much larger than the other elements of the matrix. OK. But let's just throw away beta. So if we make the approximation that beta is small, then we get that the pion mass squared is just given by mu 8 squared. The mass of the kaon squared is just given by mu 8 squared plus alpha ms over 2. And the mass of the eta squared is mu 8 squared plus 2 thirds alpha ms. So now we can form an equation out of these relations to eliminate the unknown parameters. We have three equations and two unknowns, so we can write down one prediction. So we have 4 mk squared is equal to m pi squared plus 3 m eta squared. So this is the prediction. And unlike the original prediction in the SU3 flavor symmetric theory, this one actually is satisfied to a reasonable accuracy. So it's satisfied to around 5%. All right. And that's about the level of satisfaction we'd expect given the fact that we threw away this mixing angle. Okay, so that's a success. So you can do the same exercise with other representations. And on the homework, I think on the homework, no, maybe tutorial? I forget. The Baryon octet? I forget. One of those. So you'll have to do for yourselves the same exercise with the Baryon octet. And so we'll just write it down. You have so the Baryon octet takes the following form. These are all of the spin 1/2 baryons, the lightest spin 1/2 baryons. And you'll have to do the same exercise with the mass of the baryons. If SU3 flavor was preserved, the masses of all of these baryons would be the same. Of course, it's not true. The proton mass is not the same thing as the mass of the cascades, for example. They're off by, I think, a few hundred MeV. But if you include SU3 breaking, what you'll have to show is that the following relation is satisfied. So the mass of the sigma plus 3 times the mass of the lambda divided by 2 is equal to the mass of, now I think I might have had it wrong here. Yeah, I think I wrote it down in my notes because I have M sigma appearing twice. So I think there should be an M proton or neutron appearing somewhere. So let me not write it down. I forget what it is off the top of my head, but I did it incorrectly. Okay, in my notes. So you'll have to prove a relation between the different masses, and it's called the Gell-Monocubo mass formula. This relates the different masses to one another. And when you plug in the numbers, you'll see that it works very, very well, even better than what we have here. Okay. All right. So far we've written down Lagrangians for describing states, hadronic states, including the light quarks. And I just want to mention, very briefly, states including the heavy quarks. So we'll talk a little bit about what's called flavor physics. So of course, hadrons can also include charm and bottom quarks, or their antiquarks. And so I can just list some of the lighter states. So for example, we can have the lightest pseudoscalar states. So we have what are called charmed mesons, which are typically denoted by the letter D. So we have the D0. And the D bar 0. Those are C, U bar, or C bar, U. We have the D plus and the D minus. And That's C D bar, and then C bar D. And then we can have the D plus sub S and D sub S minus, which is C S bar and S C bar. And the masses of all of these things are sort of in the range of 1800 to 2000 MeV. There's also similar states for the bottom quark. So these are bottom, sometimes known as beauty mesons. And they're typically denoted by the letter B. So we have the B plus and the B minus, which is U, B bar, and then U bar B. We have the B0 and the B0 bar. And so this is D, B bar, or B bar B. We have the B sub S, the B sub S bar. So that's a S and a B bar, and then an S bar and a B. And then we have the B sub C, plus and minus, which is C, B bar, and C bar B. And the masses of all of these states are in the range of 5 to 6 GeV. For both cases, the mass is predominantly set by the mass of either the charm quark or the bottom quark. There's also the vector states. So you just add a star to all of the names. So the D0 star would just be the vector with exactly the same quark content. So there's also states that are called quarkonium. And I'll just mention briefly, there's what this means is you have CC bar or BB bar bound states. And so you can have charmonium. Obviously that's CC bar. And the lowest lying states are denoted by eta C, which is the JP equals zero minus state. And you have the J psi, which is the vector. And you can have bottomonium. The lowest lying state is the eta B. And the vector state is denoted by epsilon, which is 1 minus. OK. And then there's many, many, many more excited states of quarkonium as well. Sorry?
What do you mean by vector state?
Vector state. So the whole spin of this particle, the spin of this particle is just one.
So it's just the same composition as the way it's.
Yeah, you can think of it that way in the non-relativistic quark model. That's the way to think about it. But for these heavy quarks, it's okay to think about them in the non-relativistic model. Similar to strangeness, we can define other approximately conserved quantum numbers. So we have charm. And it just means that the charm quark has C equal plus 1, and the antiquark has C equal minus 1. And the other quantum number is bottomness, or maybe people also call it beauty, B. And it's defined with the same convention as strangeness, so that the anti-bottom quark has bottomness 1. So the B has bottomness minus 1, and the B bar has B equals plus 1. So all the states on the left have B equals 1, and the states on the right have B equals minus 1. Okay, so we've introduced a couple of quantum numbers, strangeness, charm, bottomness, which of course are symmetries of the strong interaction. They're also symmetries of electromagnetism. So we can search for processes that violate these quantum numbers in order to probe the nature of the weak interaction. Remember, it's only the interaction of the W which is going to change quark flavor. And so processes that violate quark flavor at the hadronic level must be ultimately probing the weak interaction at the quark level. In particular, the CKM matrix is the only source of flavor violation in the standard model. So by measuring types of processes that violate these quantum numbers, we can try to probe the CP violation, the CKM matrix in all possible ways to test its consistency. In particular, the CKM matrix only arises through the interaction of the W. That means in order for flavor violation to occur, you have to change an up-type quark to a down-type quark, or vice versa. All right? The interaction of the Z doesn't involve any flavor violation. So if you have a weak interaction that only involves quarks of if you have a process that only involves quarks of the same flavor, it provides the same up-type or down-typeness. It's a very sensitive probe of this particular mechanism. So what I'm trying to say is that there's an important class of observables. And these are known as flavor changing neutral current. Or FCNCs. And what I mean by this is these are S to D transitions, or B to D transitions, or B to S transitions. Or you could also think about C to U transitions, or if you're involving the top quark, although it won't involve hadrons, you could also think about flavor changing neutral currents for the top quark. Here we're just going to focus on the lighter quarks, the lighter 5 quarks. And so a flavor changing neutral current is just changing the flavor, which must involve the weak interaction, but without changing from up type to down type or vice versa. Okay. So these are forbidden at tree level. Since the neutral current is flavor conserving. So it must occur at one loop order in the standard model. So let's just consider a simple example, which will be k zero to mu plus mu minus. So k zero will be an S bar and a D. And in order for this transition to occur, you have to change flavor, of course. And so there must be a one loop diagram involving the W. And so the diagrams that you can contribute to this look like the following. And in the loop here, I've got the W and then an up type quark. So it can either be a U, a C, or a T. And below, it's exactly the same thing, since the neutral current vertex here doesn't change the flavor. The only flavor violation occurs at these vertices here. And then you can also have other diagrams. There's a box diagram. So we can have an S bar. Oh, that's not the box diagram. And then we have a W, then we have a lepton, U plus, U minus, and the neutrino. And this is also the same UI, which is U, C, or T. Okay, so these are the diagrams that can contribute to this process. So of course, it has to occur at one loop. It has to involve the W, because the W vertices are where we encounter the CKM mixing matrix. And so at each vertex, we get a factor of the CKM matrix. So this vertex here will involve V, I, D, where I is just C, T, U, C, or T. And then up here will involve V, I, S star at that vertex. And here, it's exactly the same factors. We have VID and VIS star. So if we computed these matrix elements and added them together, the whole thing would be proportional to VID, VIS star, times some function of the mass of whatever quark is running around in these loops. So it's going to be a function of mui divided by mw, for example. And then, of course, I need to sum over the different flavors, because in principle, I can have any flavor occurring in the loop. And so it's a sum over U, C, and T. OK, so now let's assume that all of the quarks are degenerate. All right? And the approximation doesn't necessarily need to have all the quarks degenerate. But as long as all of the quarks are much lighter than the mass of the W, then I can effectively just treat them as being degenerate. I can set their masses to zero, and then ergo, they are degenerate. So if the quark masses are all degenerate, or I could set MUI over MW to 0, then this function ends up just being a constant factor, okay, which I can just pull outside of the sum. Then the matrix element is just proportional to a sum over I of VID VIS star. And I can write this as in terms of matrix multiplication. So this thing is V dagger here with the S component on the left, and then multiplying V, let me write it like this. This whole thing is just V dagger V, and then I want to take the S V components. And V, of course, is a unitary matrix. And so V dagger V is just the identity matrix. But now I'm taking an off-diagonal element of the identity matrix is equal to 0. So this is just the Kronecker delta of 2, 1, which is just equal to 0. So this is called the Jim mechanism. It's named after Glashow, Iliopoulos, and Maiani. And it's just the statement that in the limit of massless quarks, where massless just means compared to MW, all flavor-changing neutral currents must vanish. So not only are the FCNC suppressed by at the one loop level, they're also suppressed by virtue of the Jim mechanism. Yeah?
Is it the top heavier than the W?
Yeah, great. So the top badly violates exactly this. So the top is very massive. But the contribution is suppressed. For an S to D transition, like we're considering here, because VTD, the magnitude of VTD, VTS, is around 3 times 10 to the minus 4. So the only way around this suppression is to go through the state that violates this assumption the most. And so that's the top quark. But the CKM matrix elements for the top quark are very small. Or sorry, I should say the CKM matrix elements connecting the top to the first and second generations are very small. So that's an additional suppression. So FCMCs are suppressed are loop suppressed and gym suppressed. Or CKM suppressed. So in other words, the thing that's hurting you for the top quark contribution is the fact that the CKM matrix is very close to being the identity matrix. The off-diagonal elements are very small compared to the diagonal elements. And the farther you go off-diagonal, the smaller the elements get. For example, VTD is very tiny. Okay. So it means that in the standard model, FCNCs are suppressed multiple ways. So they're all very small, which means that they're very sensitive probes to physics beyond the standard model. In general, when you include new fields in your theory, there's no reason that it should satisfy exactly the same type of flavor structure as the standard model does. And in general, it doesn't. The standard model is very special from the point of view of flavor. We're limited in terms of what can violate flavor and what can't. Okay. All right, so let's see what's next. So I have a little bit of time left, so I want to discuss something that was very important for the history of piecing together the standard model. Even though today maybe it's not the most glamorous topic, and the topic is kaons. So I just want to mention kind of just a brief history of kaons. And I'm really just going to be focusing on how discoveries using kaons have informed the structure of the standard model in terms of piecing together the different ingredients. So, so the first important thing is just the fact that they're long-lived. For example, I mentioned before, kaons can decay into pions. The lifetime is very long. The rho also decays into pions. The lifetime is much shorter by around 20 orders of magnitude. And so why are kaons so long-lived? Led people to introduce an extra approximately conserved quantum number, which is strangeness. And through strangeness, we were led to understanding the eightfold way. Which was in 1961. Which led to the discovery, or the realization, that hadrons are composed of quarks. That part we're familiar with so far. The other important thing was what is known as the theta-tau puzzle. And this is related to the discovery that the standard model violates parity. So around 1950, there were two particles that were discovered. Known as the theta and the tau, and they have the same mass. So the theta, which had charge plus, would decay in the following way. It would decay to a pi plus pi zero, And the tau, also charge plus, would decay into three pions. So decay to pi plus, pi zero, pi zero, or pi plus, pi minus. And since it was known at the time that the pion has parity odds, and the spatial wave functions in the final states are L equals zero, it tells us what is the parity of each of these states. Okay? So this state had to be parity plus, and this one had to be parity minus. So this was just equal to the parity of the pion squared, and this is just equal to the parity of the pion cubed. So the only reason for supposing that these were actually two distinct particles was the fact that people were biased into thinking that parity must be a fundamental symmetry, right? How is it even conceivable that parity could be violated? But of course it is, and the hypothesis was that, well, the weak interaction can in fact violate parity. All right. So I discussed already how Li and Yang proposed this idea based on this puzzle, and then subsequently it was measured in the decays of cobalt by Wu. So standard model violates parity, and theta and the tau are the same particle, what we now call the K plus. So the next important topic that was realized from kaon physics is the topic of neutral kaon mixing, which is really what led to the prediction of the charm quark. Since this will be an FCNC, so we have eigenstates, or just, I should just say states, k0 and k0 bar, which are eigenstates of strangeness. So S is equal to minus 1 and plus 1 for these two. So although parity was known to be violated, people thought that CP, the combined operation of charge conjugation and parity, ought to be a good symmetry, or at least it seemed to be a good symmetry. And so we can write these states in terms of CP eigenstates. All right, these are not eigenstates of CP. So we can consider how parity acts on the K0. Since it's a pseudoscalar, we just get a minus sign. And charge conjugation, acting on the K0, just flips particle to antiparticle, so we have a K0 bar. So obviously, when we do the combined operation, CP on the K0, this is minus K0 bar. And the rules are the same for acting on the K0 bar. So when we do CP acting on A0 bar, we just get minus A0. So we can take this and form the CP eigenstates, just linear combinations of K0 and K0 bar. So those are known as K1, which is minus 1 half. K0 minus A bar 0. and K2. And so K2 is just the same thing with a plus sign. Okay, so now we want to write down kind of an effective Hamiltonian describing the two-kaon system. So we're going to write it down in the K0 bar basis. The Hamiltonian takes the following form. I'm going to write the diagonal entries as mk minus I over 2 gamma, mk minus I over 2 gamma. But we can also have off-diagonal terms as well, which I'll write as m12 minus I over 2 gamma 12 and m12 star minus I over 2 gamma 12 star. Okay? So the M terms are supposed to represent the mass matrix for the kaons, and that, of course, is Hermitian, as you'd expect. But then the decay terms are anti-Hermitian. It's an anti-Hermitian matrix which contributes to the Hamiltonian, and that is just supposed to represent probability non-conservation due to the decay of the kaons. All right. So if there was no mixing between the neutral kaon states, between K0 and K0 bar, then these off-diagonal elements would just be 0. And I would just be left with the mass minus I times the decay width. But they're not 0. So I have M12 minus I gamma 12. Just comes from a transition from K0 to K0 bar, or vice versa. So it's just given by this. So there are terms in the Hamiltonian, which of course violate strangeness by 2 units, because they can convert an strangeness 1, K bar, into a strangeness minus 1, K0 bar. Okay? And on the homework, which you'll have to do for this week, you'll have to write down the diagrams, the Feynman diagrams, that are responsible for this transition, okay? But of course, you know it's due to the weak interaction, right? That violates strangeness, all right? So it's an FCNC, this matrix element. The other thing I want to mention is that CPT, which we believe to be a conserved symmetry, imposes that the diagonal elements are the same. So it just means that this one is equal to that one by CPT. Okay, so if CP is conserved, then you can show that both of these elements have to be, I should say these parameters have to be real. CP is conserved, then M12 and gamma 12 are both real, or at least I should say they can be made to be real by a suitable phase rotation. So that means that the off-diagonal elements are also the same. So now we can diagonalize the Hamiltonian very straightforwardly. The the eigenstates are just the same thing as the CP eigenstates. And so we can do this explicitly. I can just write down the CP eigenstates as a rotation matrix, 1, minus 1, 1, 1, of the eigenstates of strangeness. And I can call this matrix U. And so then I can write down the Hamiltonian. I can transform the Hamiltonian from the original basis of a given of strangest eigenstates into the basis of CP eigenstates. And it's just equal to mk plus m12 minus I over 2 gamma plus gamma 1, 2, 0, 0. And then we have mk minus m12 minus I over 2 gamma minus gamma 1, 2. OK. And so the thing to notice, first of all, is that you have splitting between the CP eigenstates. There's a splitting between their masses. And that splitting is just given by M12. So this splitting is something that can be calculated. Once you calculate the real part of this amplitude, and which you'll have to do in the homework. Okay, so it's a flavor-changing neutral current, effectively, this mass splitting, because it changes strangeness by 2 units. So it has to involve the weak interaction. It has to involve a loop diagram. And it also, of course, is suppressed by the Gym mechanism. So it's Gym suppressed. And so if all of the quark flavors were massless, of course, delta mk would be equal to 0. But the fact that some of the quark masses are different and are non-zero allows us to compute delta mk to be non-zero. And in particular, the charm quark mass gives a contribution to this mass splitting. And so by measuring this mass splitting experimentally, it had allowed historically a prediction of what the charm quark mass should be before it was discovered. OK. So that was just assuming that we have CP conservation. But the story is a little bit more complicated because, as we know, CP is not conserved in the standard model. Yeah? These two terms approximately cancel. But I'm only writing down here the difference in the masses. So there's also a difference in the decays as well, the decay rates. That would be something different. And they are very different. All right, so the last important breakthrough was CP violation. And so what we have observationally for the two neutral kaon states are what are called k long and k short. And k short decays into 2 pions. which is a CP even final state with a short lifetime. Around 10 to the minus 10 seconds. Of course, it's not short compared to the strong interaction, but it's just short compared to K long, which decays to 3 pions plus other states, which are CP odd final states. And the lifetime is longer. Around 5 times 10 to the minus 8. So the lifetime's around 500 times longer for the k long than the k short. And if CP were conserved, then the k short would be what we call k1, and the k long would be equal to k2, since those are the CP eigenstates. The reason for the fact that one of the kaons decays with a short lifetime and the other decays with a long lifetime is really just an accident. It's just due to phase space. So the mass of the kaon minus the 3 times the mass of the pion is only around 80 to 90 MeV, depending on the charges a little bit. So it's much smaller. The available phase space is much smaller for the 3 pion mode compared to the 2 pion mode, and that's the reason for this difference in the lifetimes. Okay. So we got lucky, in fact, because this vast difference in the lifetimes makes it easier experimentally to prepare a beam of k long states. All you have to do is produce neutral kaons, and then you just wait for the k shorts to decay away. And all you're left with is k longs plus some very, very, very exponentially small fraction of k shorts, which you can neglect. Okay? So to a good approximation, you can produce a very pure beam of k longs just by waiting long enough. And what was observed by Cronin and Fitch, and also their colleagues, Turle and Christensen, who did not win the Nobel Prize, was that k long, a small fraction of the time, will decay into 2 pions. So this is a CP violating decay. All right. So it tells us that this is only approximately true. In fact, the physical mass eigenstates are actually only an admixture of the CP eigenstates. So in fact, k long and short should be thought of as an admixture, k12 plus some small parameter epsilon of the opposite CP state. And then there's some normalization, which is 1 over square root of 1 plus epsilon squared. OK? So let's see if I did. It should be the other way around, k short, k long. OK? So the reason for getting this decay is because some fraction of the time k long decays in the CP violating way just due to the fact that it's an admixture of CP eigenstates. And so for the kaon system, to a good approximation, this parameter epsilon is just related to the imaginary part of what I called M12, okay, in a particular phase convention. And so when you compute the diagram, the Feynman diagrams, related to neutral kaon mixing, it's the imaginary part of that diagram which will give you a CP violation. Okay? And you're probably aware that CP violation due to the CKM matrix only occurs when you have three flavors. And so the mixing diagram will also need to involve all three flavors as well. Okay, so that's I've run out of time, so that's all I'm going to say. And then tomorrow, we're going to talk about problems with the standard model to conclude.